Hello, and welcome to Peter's podcast, where we talk about real yoga, actual happiness, and deep living. Thanks for joining me. Through the magic of pre-recording, I get to be both home in Brooklyn and in Helsinki. Today's episode, I'm going to have a talk with somebody I really admire, Kristen Rae Stevens, who is a yoga teacher, an Ayurveda practitioner, and just general all-around great person. She's going to be chatting with me a month ago back in Brooklyn, and we're going to catch up about what she's doing and her thoughts on yoga in general and Ayurveda specifically. I hope you enjoy it. Here we go. Back in time. Kristen Rae Stevens is a nationally certified Ayurvedic practitioner. She lectures and teaches on various whole health subjects from the perspective of yoga, Ayurveda, and somatic movement and contemplative practices, and has maintained a private clientele for 15 years. In addition, she teaches Hatha Yoga from a shadow yoga perspective. For current offerings about Kristen, check www.somarae.com. That's S-O-M-A-R-A-E.com. Hi, Kristen.
Hi, Peter.
So lovely to have you here in Crown Heights.
Really lovely to be with you. Thank you for inviting me.
And to find out that we're Brooklyn neighbors.
Exactly.
Yes.
So close.
Yeah. Cool. So just before we got online, we were talking a little bit about what you're up to, where you're teaching and what you're teaching, and maybe you can share a little of that for people who don't know you so well.
Sure. So during the summer months, let's see, there's a couple of teacher trainings that are going on at Integral Yoga.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been helping introduce their basic students, their 200 level hour, to the concept of Ayurveda, mm-hmm. and how Ayurveda integrates into lifestyle practices as well as yoga practices. So I'll be helping those guys out in July and August, and then later in the year with that. And I think I end up doing that with Ishta for the 300 hour for the more advanced group.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm doing a teacher's class for some of my peers at Yoga Works, where I'm doing the same thing. So I'm introducing them to the concepts of Ayurveda in asana, as well as...
In terms of how you approach your asana.
In terms of how you approach the asana, and then actually... So for many, many, many moons, I studied a variety of somatic techniques and anatomy. And I've also taught anatomy for sonic yoga and a bunch of different teacher trainings. And now I'm doing more of the Ayurvedic work and really helping, you know, yoga students think less literally, mm-hmm. about anatomy and, mm-hmm. really get more of the energetic processes,
right.
behind the asana work and behind
to
the physical work.
To see it as
work.
A continuum.
To really take it so that it doesn't end up being just gross anatomy,
right.
with their physical form, that it really can, you know, it is the entryway to, you know, this higher dimension.
Yeah. Awesome. So maybe we can step back for a minute. So how did you go from yoga toward Ayurveda, or were you first interested in Ayurveda and then went into yoga? People seem to go one way or the other.
I know. So I was introduced to yoga when I was dancing, and then I was like, "Ooh, that's really interesting." But I had a dance career going on, and then I never aspired to be a teacher. I never aspired to let that be my path.
Yeah,
it was just one of those things that sort of happened. It happened, you know. I had spent nearly 5 years with my teacher studying, and then some students at the local gym were like, "Hey, will you like teach us that thing?" And,
yeah.
You know, so it kind of happened that way. And then once I started teaching, I realized, oh, I still have so much to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to really find a teacher. And so this was in Illinois. So this was in southern Illinois. And then I went up to Chicago. And then I was getting introduced to different styles of yoga and, you know, really kind of on that path of meeting a lot of different people and finding out a lot of different things through my own personal research. And Ayurveda came up and I was like, ooh, that's really interesting. Like, definitely would love to study that further. Mm-hmm. But there wasn't much going on. There wasn't, you know, a lot of information at that point. And I went through the yoga journey for some time. And then I had, unfortunately, a couple of injuries that really started to set me back once I moved to New York.
From dancing or from yoga?
So my dancing injuries were kind of okay. And then when I moved to New York, I actually, I didn't move as, like, because I wanted to move. I moved to follow my guy at that mm-hmm. point. And so I was like, okay, trying new things. And one of the things you never do as a dancer is go skiing.
Oh, shoot.
Yeah. So I broke my knee. And that was an injury that, like, for the first time in my life, it stuck. Like, it wasn't something that I felt I could really work with on my own and use my tools that I mm-hmm. had worked with in the past for all of my other stuff. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of kept messing things up. And so I needed to dig deeper and dig deeper, and I wasn't finding the answers. So I ended up studying Ayurveda.
Hmm.
And I searched high and low and far and wide. So I went out to New Mexico and studied with Dr. Ladd. And then I did I was one of the first students over at Kripalu School of Ayurveda when they first launched that programming. And then I was fortunate enough to go to India and study in India in Faridabad, and then study with some teachers around India. And then the funny thing is that the more I got involved in the Ayurveda practices, it actually kept bringing me back to yoga, bringing me back to my yoga practice.
Right.
It never, you know, I'd never left it, but, you know, I started going, oh, okay, you know, this whole dinacharya, this whole, you know, daily attention, you know, is something that, you know, is innate in me really from dance, you know, but my dancing has kind of taken the form of my yoga practice. And then so that led me to meet my teacher. So it was the first time I had had like a teacher, like someone I could say, okay, I'm going to go anywhere on the earth, which I literally have done, you know, to follow you and kind of listen to what you have to say right now.
Uh-huh.
And so his name is Chandra Remete. And so I've been studying with him and his wife for the last 7, going on 8 years.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and he is,
Micah.
Oh, beautiful.
Micah the yoga dog. She was in teacher training this weekend.
Oh, nice. Are you good at Shavasana?
She's yes. good at down dog.
Oh, you're good at down dog. You show everybody the down dog. She's a big girl.
Yes. Hi, girl.
Wow, she's very special.
I'm good at down dog, too.
Hi.
Hi, Wendy.
How are you? I'm good. It's nice to see you. I'll
you
give you
too.
Just give you a little.
Wendy and Micah steal the show for a bit, and we start to talk a bit about our potential travels into the Balkan states, and Kristen's been there as well, so brought up some interesting ideas about sort of where we are and the history of that region and how it relates to what we're going through in the U.S. So we'll pick up with a little political slash yoga commentary there.
Sarajevo, and they were like, we visited some people that have their offices up. It's like basically like an amphitheater of hills right around the city. Have you been there?
I haven't been. It's so beautiful, but
it's like very much like a basin and then these hills around. Not big ones, but like sort of like San Francisco. You could just like,
right.
you know, you go up the hills and there's houses and whatnot. But it really rings the city. And we got up there and they were like, yeah, this is where the snipers were.
Right.
And you couldn't walk in the valley, you couldn't walk in the city without getting sniped at. And like we have the best trauma surgeons of any European country now because they got really good at trauma surgery.
Right.
I was like, wow. And like what's your, you know, what do you do for your nonprofit?
Yeah.
So, I know.
But Croatian beaches are supposed to be beautiful.
They are. Like, that's what I meant to say was, yes, like, we were there at the end of June, so more essentially what you guys are going to, like in early July, and it was like just amazing. Yeah.
Fish and
like if you eat fish.
And you know, the stories that like what you're telling, it's something that because we are so disconnected from history in the realms of government that are calling the shots right now.
Right.
They think, oh, no big deal. All these organizations that are international that are trying to maintain some level of communication and everything,
right,
those are meaningless.
Right.
They have no value.
Right.
They only have value when you look at the history and what was there before and
precisely
why we have those organizations.
Precisely. No, the yoga community that I spend a lot of time with is very international, and I have definitely been like slightly miffed, but I'm just like, whatever, I can take it, because they're all there like, oh, Americans, like, oh, I mean, they're just like, you just don't get it, like you just really don't understand, like we did this, we did that, like we've come out of this, we're still living this, we're still, you know,
right.
and you are like, oh, okay, right, like, you know,
well,
like if you take the broad lens, like there's a lot more to take in here, isn't there?
But I think we all have to be a little prepared that traveling in Europe as an American right now, we're going to get some little bit of flack.
I don't know. I haven't been, you know, like I haven't, like
just
I.
Just from the fringe, you know, like I've, you know, like remember that guy in the, you know, we, like, we're just in some food shop getting a snack and outside of Stockholm a couple of years ago. And we're basically accosted by some guy who was South American, who was married to a Swede, who was like, America out.
Right.
Like, just, I don't care who you are as American, you have a blue passport.
Yeah. No, I hate to say this, but I feel like that's what we're going through here, even though, with like racial relations.
Totally.
And just like being like, can you have a conversation about, can you have a dialogue about it?
Mm-hmm.
As a white person, can you just sit with what's coming at you, like, and I just feel like, for me personally, anytime anybody wants to say anything to me in Europe, I will let them.
Yes.
Sometimes, often, I will surprise them, because I do follow politics. I wish I didn't. Like, I'm trying, like, I left social media about a half year ago, and I'm considering leaving media in general.
Yeah.
But
for
it's
now,
just like,
right?
Yeah, but I'm just like, you know, I do follow things, I do actually know what's going on in your country, and
yeah.
I think that when we are able to actually get to that point,
yeah,
people really appreciate
sure
an American who's educated.
But I'm going to let you get back to your podcast.
Cool.
Our primary topic.
Huh?
Primary topic.
Primary
this was
topic,
a useful
is,
topic.
This was, yeah, this was great.
Yeah.
Thanks for the interlude.
Cool. So where we left off was you had found your teacher.
Yeah. So I found somebody that I really could call my teacher. So I had definitely been like on that search for some time.
Mm-hmm.
And there's definitely been people that have made, you know, some impacts, or this, you know, had pointed out a few things. But nobody would really like stuck.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was one of those things where I was just like, oh, that's a really profound reflection. So I knew I needed to stick it out,
right,
you know, for some time and really make a commitment and follow through
mm-hmm.
on basically kind of like a personal vow or a personal, you know, commitment that I had made to, you know.
It sounds like you have, throughout your whole studies, you have a fair amount of discipline once you choose to do something.
Yes, yeah. And I will say that, you know, I think that is a testament to just like my upbringing, that kind of came from, you know, from one, having a mother with like a little bit of German genetics.
Uh-huh.
And then two, you know, just, you know, like just starting ballet at a very young age. Ballet is like,
right,
you know, super disciplined, has a lot of rules,
right,
you know, that, you know, kind of look funky from the onset, but are important for, you know, kind of raising a human that I will say, it's funny because I was just at a staff meeting yesterday, and some of those ideas are being questioned by, you know, new generations right now. And I think that some of them are incredibly valid, and I think that it's good to have those conversations. I will say that there are certain there are certain things that I feel potentially might be misunderstood mm-hmm. in some of the younger generation that I feel really could, like, I mean, who knows what the evolution of this whole grand experiment is, but I feel like helping people understand codes of conduct is not, you know, infringing, you know, your oppression on them. It's really helping something new and something more powerful to generate. And sometimes, especially in this world, I feel like the loosey-goosey structure doesn't serve people the way I think they feel like it does.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's such a rich topic, you know, because the way that we talk about Tantra at Ishta, we think about using one's practice to get in touch with your intuition and your greatest knowing. Mm-hmm. And when you're operating from that place, then you emanate the code of conduct. But it's so rare that people are in that state of clarity.
It's hard to be enlightened.
Yeah.
And many of us, try as we might, may not achieve that goal.
Right. So then the code becomes the intermediary. Mm. It's like it's not a necessity, but it's a useful tool.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm watching TV version of the Ramayana right now on Netflix.
And who did it?
I keep bringing it up. It's some, I don't know, is it's that like Indian TV.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, so it's fascinating. In Hindi with translate subtitles.
Oh, nice. Is it an animated thing or is it?
It's not animated. It's animated. Live action.
Oh, sweet.
It looks awesome. Like the director is from animation though with the crazy way that he's doing it.
That's awesome.
But it's fascinating to watch the expression of the codes of conduct, you know,
right.
and with Ram continually saying, you know, a righteous person will do this, you know, and it like does establish these ways of living that are both respectful, but also they have law built into them in terms of, you know, this is something that is not positive. In other words, you're doing this will bring you a negative result.
Dukkha. Yeah. I think that's the thing too, is so if you go to India and you understand kind of the roots of all of this work, and you understand the codes of conduct or these fables or, you know, these historical texts, you know, obviously translation is always a really, really super tricky, nuanced thing. And I've been spending a lot of time with Dr. Robert Thurman, and it's really interesting to see him ponder over word choice when he does translations and how it can totally change like the sutra or just literally like the feeling of what it is that he's trying to convey.
Yeah.
Excuse me. And so I think that sometimes, I mean, because even like I didn't study Shakespeare, and I think it was part of it was the language, and I feel like such a Shakespeare dummy. I'm like, I can't believe I'm 40 years old and I don't really know this, you know, and so it upsets me sometimes. And so I think that sometimes, you know, when you take something that's so old and you try to translate it and then you try to not modernize it, but help the modern soul, you know, understand it.
Yeah.
And it's interesting if you go to India and you kind of watch this whole structure and you watch this thing happen, really, it does come down to like love, like loving, you know, your teacher, loving, you know, it's this like, it's this pure exchange, you know, and it's deeply rooted in something that we all want, we all strive, you know, to give and to receive purely.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Anywho.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, from the tantric place, we're looking at this oneness, and that's where the love is. If you can expand your sense of what is me.
Right.
And it keeps growing and growing and growing, then more and more and more you can be in someone else's shoes. You can see what they're going through. You're at least willing to try to figure out, why are they acting this way toward me, mm-hmm. or toward someone else?
Mm-hmm.
And then that love has a possibility of presenting itself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I want to thank everybody who is a sponsor of Peter's podcast on Patreon. Patreon is a cool crowdsourcing, crowdfunding site that I use to make it possible to have Peter's podcast without advertisements. So many of the podcasts I love to listen to stop right in the middle and sell me a mattress or sell me a watch or sell me some food service. I'm just like constantly fast forwarding through that stuff. I hope that I can avoid doing that in Peter's podcast, but it requires some funding from folks like you who enjoy this content and are willing to, say, spend the price of a cappuccino on it or even less. So if that's you, sounds like it's worth doing, please check it out, patreon.com/peterspodcast, and you can subscribe for any amount you like. Some of my sponsors are getting a session with me every month where we talk for an hour online, or getting a mantra from me, or just dropping a buck here and there to make it possible. You can always start, stop, change the amount. So it's super easy. Thank you. Patreon.com/Peter's Podcast.
Yeah, I think that, are you familiar with Dr. Robert Svoboda?
Just a little bit.
Okay.
I've seen books. I can't remember if I've read anything.
Yeah, that's okay. So he's the tantric scholar that I think that I, you know, have spent the most time with and studied the most with and, you know, kind of just watch. And it's interesting because, you know, what I see is him really embodying the teachings of his teacher. And like anything, sometimes you can get a flash of insight in if you spend time with, you know, someone, but oftentimes it takes time to really understand or recognize or like see through even the teacher's eyes, mm-hmm. you know, and like what it is that they're trying to pass on or trying to convey. And so I think that that's something that that my teacher talks about a little bit is, you know, is like, you know, shopping's nice. It's good, you know, if you want a new pair of jeans or a fresh shirt, you know, it's good to look around.
Right.
But it's hard to really like make a judgment call on something unless you've really spent time
yeah.
with it and have been able to, you know, see it from the underbelly
yeah.
And then decide, you know, where and what you want to do from there.
Yeah. And, you know, we definitely get strong notions of what draws us. But when I see the success people have at finding their way, it's become clear to me that it matters only that the teachers are authentic, mm-hmm. but it doesn't necessarily matter the particular way. You know, that if you plunge deeply with someone authentic, you find that deep stuff.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I don't know if it's just, you know, kind of like the overpopulation of yoga, or if it's, you know, the society in which we live, or, you know, how this thing has been structured. But, you know, it is interesting to see kind of like the glamour magazine of it, you know, the keeping it light and, you know, keeping it just very like vague and very, you know, easy to grasp.
Yeah. It's superficial in the true sense of that word. It's just
it really is.
Floating on the surface, and it's the stories about it. You know, like I'm going to look nice when I have my good outfit and I can do handstand.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And then I can have a picture and I can put it on Instagram.
The Instagramization of the planet.
Yeah. But the going deep, the like, how do you stay calm when things are challenging? How do you, right. you know, stick to your way when you run into an obstacle?
Yeah.
Those parts of yoga or whatever path you pick, you know, mm-hmm. but if you pick that path and stick to it and find the way,
right.
then now you're in the stuff.
Right, you know? Exactly.
Now you're getting what it's got.
I think there's also another thing that, like, I've always found interesting, too, is that, like, obviously, you know, the true sense of this, all of these practices, is that it is individualized, right? So it absolutely has to be seen through your own eyes and, like, really felt through your own skin and really breathed, you know, through your own body. But there are reasons for, you know, some of the techniques, and there are reasons for some of the ways in which things are taught, and there are reasons for all those things. And I find that's what I find interesting, is how quickly, you know, people are like, well, like I'm only going to take this part over here because, like, this part, like, suits me.
Right.
Rather than right. actually digging deep into the obstacle that is in front of them
yeah.
that is potentially part of maybe one of the greatest transformations that they could go through.
Right, right.
If they were able to see that through. And oftentimes that's what the teacher is doing, is holding, like, space, you know, and just being like, okay, again.
Right.
You know, let's
right.
go back to this again.
Yeah.
You know, and so... It's and I see it from both being, you know, a teacher and a guide and, you know, a consultant, as well as a practitioner, you know, and going like, oh, you know, here's really where my ego jumped up, and, you know, and I was like, oh, my teacher's not understanding me. No, 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 you know,
right,
and I'm like,
right.
oh, okay. Can
yeah.
I go and, like, sit with that and
yes.
like really look and see.
Yeah. And you asked me earlier, like, if I teach with Wendy, you know, mm-hmm. and I find it with Wendy the strongest, because, you know, we're spouses, so there's a lot of emotional entanglement there. But sitting in teacher trainings with all of the various teachers, it took years for me to be able to just sit there and let them talk.
Yeah.
And not think, I can say that better. I should pipe up and add, you know. They didn't understand what the question was, you know.
Yes, and I really think that, like, as teachers, I think that that's something that maybe sometimes we're lacking, is the way to be able to say, like, hey, like I see you. I know your struggle. I have the same struggles with my students. I know that you probably have this, you know, and so, and just really being able to kind of, like, create that community.
Yeah.
You know, that, like, oh, of course.
Yeah.
You know, and that's really what I think, you know, the sharing space is about. And I don't, like, and there's a part of me that's like, okay, so is that just the wash pool that we're all going through? That's our samsara right now. You know, we're still not there on the path to enlightenment, or is that that there isn't enough room to be able to dialogue that out and, you know, say.
Well, I think it has to do with this getting stuck in the ego component. Like,
sure.
You know.
Sure.
Like, the teaching is happening. It's not happening from the words that are being said. It's the
right.
energy that's getting exchanged. That's part, the words are part of the expression of that.
Right.
And it's at the moment you jump out and say, oh, no, I, that's where you need to practice.
Ooh, that I,
and
yeah.
the tapas is just zip it.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So true.
So so you were already studying Ayurveda, and you're teaching yoga when you met your teacher? Or the
I
Ayurveda?
Was, yeah, yeah, I was.
Because you had done Vasant Lad's program and...
Yeah, so and Dr. Ladd, he's another one that
did you see his the movie about him that just came out?
I
haven't seen it.
Sad thing is I missed the movie, and I got an invitation from a friend of mine in Vermont, and who was like, "Oh, the movie." And then And then I realized, I was like, oh, this movie's getting released. Because I'd been at the Institute watching them kind of do some footage or do some, you know, and I was just like, oh. And then all of a sudden I realized, oh, my God, it's done. And then someone was like, yeah, like, it's being shown in New York. And then I was like, ah. And I had wanted to go. And it was, like, the last day and, like, the last showing or something like that that I was, like, trying to scramble to get to. And, you know, as luck would have it,
yeah,
it just didn't happen.
I'm hoping that it comes out on one of the channels. They seem to be doing that with documentaries especially.
It will. I think it'll come out or it'll get a chance to get shown again. One of my teacher's wife actually is in the process of making a film that I actually am going to host a fundraiser for.
Oh, cool.
Because I really want her film to be seen.
Do you have any details on that?
The details are is that I will introduce a little bit of the shadow yoga practice or hatha yoga from a shadow yoga perspective, and I'll talk about my teachers, and then I will also introduce a little bit of Ayurveda and some of the Ayurveda concepts, probably of food, because people really like food.
Yeah.
So it's a food.
That's like Glamour magazine stuff.
It is, yes, but people really like food, so I got to give them, you know, what they want a little bit. And then I haven't decided what donation I would like to ask of people, so it'll be probably like a three-hour workshop, and I haven't figured out the exact location, and I haven't figured out the exact date. Okay. All those details are coming. It was something that I wanted to have happened earlier this year in June, and then it's just not going to happen. So I'm debating on whether or not to wait until the fall, until September, because I want to have the best turnout that I can and raise as much money as I can for her.
Great.
Yeah.
Look forward to seeing it.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Cool. So, but no, so I didn't get a chance to see Dr. Ladd's film. He is another person that, and this is the thing that I think has happened to me, is so I met Dr. Ladd, and then he is truly one of the most sattvic people I've ever spent time with. He is the embodiment of sattva almost day in, day out. He's a beautiful, beautiful being. And he never takes credit for the words. He always says, the teacher. He always is paying respects back and back and back to all of his teachers and everything he's been given. Beautiful, beautiful being. But so he, and the lessons that I took from him, I started seeing some of those lessons in my current teacher. And so it was really interesting just to be able to have the, you know, I felt like that was what was really powerful. As my current teacher is, he spends a lot of time doing research on ancient texts and translating works and, you know, really trying to put this lineage out there from, you know, this unbroken chain. And when you start to really kind of see that information get disseminated by different individuals, but not only does it echo the same thing, there's some details in there that are very precise.
Mm-hmm.
That was something for me that was like, oh, that's really good. You know, that's really affirming. And so I felt like I was, you know, in the right place, like doing the right things with the right people.
Yeah. So something occurs to me, because we have our mental side, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we're interested in learning and seeing and experiencing. And then there's also this side of being and, you know, the whole Ishvara Pranidhana component, right? The letting go, it's not going to come from anything I'm doing or I'm learning necessarily. So both of those have to stay in balance. And I'd be interested in knowing, because you're someone who studies a lot, how do you find that balance? Where do you, or is it a bit of a pendulum that you go back and forth with?
You know, what's really interesting is, so just listening to you and, like, you know, hearing about your trip and stuff like that. So I actually have been really struggling with, I've been struggling with some personal transformation right now. And, you know, 2017 was a very difficult year for just like the larger consciousness of humanity, not to mention, you know, the United States. Mm-hmm. And then I had some personal losses that just I knew as they were happening, the impact that they were having, the profound impact. But at the end of 2017, I really kind of just like, you know, witnessed myself and said, wow, like, you really gotten taken out by this one. And so it's actually, I'm really struggling right now, having been on this path as teacher for as long as I have, and someone who is sharing information, and as you were saying earlier, always working really hard to share it authentically, like staying connected to the material, staying rich, really keeping it alive, and seeking out inspiration and seeking out, you know, people and places and things. And I, you know, kind of started 2018 being like, wow, I'm in such an emotionally heavy place, like in a place that I've witnessed in some of my students, I've witnessed in some of my clients. Like, I didn't know I had the capacity to get that heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've questioned if the responsible thing to do for me is to actually like back off of spending as much time as I do teaching, mm-hmm. and consulting. And so I've definitely thinned out my schedule, and I've been saying no to a lot more projects and no to a lot more things, to the point where I'm feeling like I may need a sabbatical that's more than just saying no, but gives me space to actually really kind of find that light again, mm-hmm. and not have to kind of do it in the work. I don't know what the particulars of that will look like or be, and I don't know how much of that will come to fruition or not. You know, it is one of those things where it's like, it's a, just like you said, it's the fear, the ego holding on to like the what you know, mm-hmm. you know, and then just really surrendering and saying, okay, like that higher power, that bigger thing, like it's going to take care of me.
Yeah.
And so I am feeling it out by continuing to look for signs and pointers of where I need to take leadership, because I know that I need to do that, but I'm also still feeling kind of exhausted and going, okay, do I need to rest it out? Do I need to work it out from a different angle, from a different corner, from a different perspective?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so I'm like very much very much in that in space that question, right now. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yes, so I'm going to live vicariously through you and your travels.
Well, happy to do what I can. Yeah. Fascinating. I'm interested to hear a little bit what you think about the Ayurveda. You said you're doing a little bit of training on it. Like, one of the things I feel very strongly about in the Ishta training is that we include an Ayurveda modules, as small as it is, it's
right.
Once we introduce it, even before we introduce it, it's hard when you do teacher training, you kind of want to teach everything right in the beginning so
of
then
course.
You can elaborate on it for the whole course. But once we finally get to speak about Ayurveda, it becomes such great shorthand for explaining so many things about yoga practice.
Totally.
It's kind of unfathomable to me to think about like learning yoga without learning Ayurveda. But what is it like when you get to share that component with people who've been teaching for a while without that, and then you get to introduce them to Ayurveda? What is it that you're talking about? And you talked a little bit about the energy and whatnot. Yeah,
it's so funny actually, because the couple of teacher trainings, like people are like, you know, really excited about their yoga and they're doing their practice and they're doing that, you know, and then sometimes I've like introduced Ayurveda and then people go, well, wait, I just want to do a teacher training on Ayurveda, you know, and they're just really excited about that work.
Yeah. And And I guess we should say for anybody who's listening who doesn't know what Ayurveda is.
Oh, you want to define that for us? Well, no, I mean, I think that's so beautiful what you just said, actually, that you can't imagine them not being taught together, because that supposedly is how it's always been taught and meant to be, right? Mm. And so it's like when I think about like Krishnamacharya, you know, and his level of expertise and how, you know, he would assess someone, you know, I think about, oh, okay, well, here's someone who, there's no compartmentalization of like, well, this is the Ayurveda part that I'll talk to you about. Right. And then this is the yoga. And right. then, you know, we'll talk about the Bhagavad Gita. You know, it's right. just like, no, it's a holistic practice. It's a yeah. wholesome thing. And one of the things that I share with students time and time and time again is I say, you know, the whole of this thing supposedly can be understood in four lifetimes. So don't get too worried about it if you don't understand it in this 2.5-hour lecture.
Right.
You know? but the Ayurveda was always present to help the practitioner or the teacher, and then ultimately the student, understand their physical body so that then they could take the mental work from the yoga and then move into a more spiritual practice so that the body and the mind and then the soul were taken care of on that journey.
Right. So that science of life name was literally about how do you stay living while you do your work?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. You know, and then, you know, so it's like, and then if you look towards, you know, the different schools and, you know, and so, I mean, and even, you know, myself, like, so I'll have students, you know, and they're just like, well, yes, I just picture you like going home and then like preparing like khichdi with your husband and eating dinner by like 5 p.m. You know, and so they have this like really idea. Right. And I said, right. Well, I know that's what you picture, but
yeah,
I
was like,
I live in New York City. Yeah. I'm an independent contractor. Yeah. And, you know, and so, I, you know, and yes, there's been times when my Dinacharya and my practice has been so focused on more of the Ayurvedic, you know, concepts. Mm-hmm. And then maybe then it is more of my yoga practice. And then sometimes it's more of the live and let live, mm-hmm. right? And as the like, okay, I'm just going to go ahead and take the more tantric model and just see what comes yeah. and stay present.
Yeah.
And so that's always, I think, the difficult thing when you're dealing with students or like off the onset, is being able to say, here are these techniques. I need to drive this home so that you understand the power of it.
Right.
But how can you do this without becoming dogmatic?
Right.
And really be able to keep the life present inside of this and actually move beyond technique.
Yes.
And
then,
you know,
on the flip side of that, when you emphasize too much of the whatever,
right,
then you have this issue with the discernment not being there to let you know, hey, wait a minute, you're not practicing anymore.
Right.
This is just a rationalization of doing whatever you feel like.
Yes.
Even though that whatever you feel like may or may not be serving you.
Yes.
Right. It's fine to enjoy the beauty of life. I mean, to not enjoy the beauty of life is very egotistical. Like, I'm the only thing that's important. Obviously, there's a yeah. great deal of wonder in the world, and it's there to experience. But when you lose connection with that other component, the tapas component, the, you know, staying righteous, we used that word earlier, right? Right? The righteousness and the rules of behaving appropriately.
Right, right.
You know, brahmacharya, all these other things, then you're off.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. My teacher talks a lot about it being, you know, like watch that nothing becomes an imposition,
mm-hmm.
that it's not the mind trying to force something
mm-hmm.
on the body or the body trying to force something on the mind.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's an interesting thing, because I'll have some people who are like, yeah, someone told me like, I can't meditate. Like I can't sit down. Like, so it's, you know, that's just like who I am, you know? So yeah. I say, like, okay. And then, but then it's also the reverse of that is people are like, well, like I would just rather do like, you know, trapeze class or like lift weights at the gym or go swimming. And then like, I'll just do like my yoga, what have you, you know, that kind of thing. And so the Ayurveda, the thing that I love to share about the Ayurveda, and the big thing actually I've been introducing to Ishta students particularly, because they have a little jump start on it, so we kind of take it to the next level, is really helping them understand not the mahagunas, although they are incredibly important, you know, rajas, sattva, and tamas, but going actually into the gunas, so really understanding the vimshati gunas, so that they go, oh, these qualities, hot, cold, light, dark, heavy, light, you know, sticky, smooth, these qualities are all inherent in these things called doshas. These doshas exist within the physiognomy of each and every one of us. And these qualities exist in the environment around us. They even exist in the qualities of the cosmos and how the cosmos is reflecting on your being at this time. And if something isn't quite tuned up right, which quality can you adjust, you know? And that's the duh in the Ayurveda, is the simplistic factor, but it's actually incredibly nuanced and mm-hmm. incredibly full and has the super rich place to go. And, you know, and I feel like that's something that, that is like, that's the takeaway that I really, you know, I'm like, it's not really just about like, you know, eating lentils or not doing dairy or, you know, I was mm-hmm. like, if we can take a little step further. And then, you know, oftentimes I will point out to people who really like to run 80 miles a week or, mm-hmm. you know, that maybe some of those qualities, you know, in that particular habit might actually be affecting
right.
their mind or their nervous system.
Right.
And that may be part of the interruption.
Because it's not doshically balancing.
Right. Yeah. Or just not even doshically balancing, just not balancing to them right here and now.
And now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And so it's a, that's something that it requires a great, there is a maturity that needs to happen. Not necessarily like a maturity as in like you can only be 60 to understand this, but there is like a maturity of, you know, like we've been speaking about with the ego, that this is all about introspection.
Yeah.
And every time these things keep turning back on you, you know, can you stay calm? Can you sit with it? And, you know, can you start to maybe say, oh, right, I do like to run a lot. I started jogging years ago and that became my, you know, habit. And, oh, I do have X, Y, and Z happening. And perhaps what you're telling me might make some sense and maybe I can make a shift.
Yeah.
And we all make certain shifts easily. And there are some that, you know, it's the whole idea of, you know, vices,
mm-hmm.
you know, they're called vices for a reason.
Mm-hmm. Gripping you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
So. Yeah. And I feel the need to clarify something I said, because when we talk about whenever we use the word should, or this is not what is best for you or something, it can sound like rules or it can sound like dogma, but what we're talking about is when you make a choice to do something, it has an outcome. And when you make a different choice, it has a different outcome. So adjusting something isn't because you're supposed to or because right. there's some rules, or it makes you a more saintly person.
Oh,
it's that exactly. there's a gift from doing it that way, and that's what you're after. You're after shifting your life into that
beautifully said
vibration. Yeah.
Right. No, that's perfectly said. I think that that's really, and that's the, I think sometimes, you know, and it's hard not to feel sometimes judged, I think, you know, as a student, you know, cause you're just like, oh, well, wait, you know, all of a sudden the spotlight's really on me. And like, you know, the fact that I like to run a lot, or I like to drink coffee, or, you know, what have you. You know, and it's just like, no, it's not, it has nothing to do with judgment, you know, and so that's why I really like to teach the gunas, the qualities. It's just, these are qualities that will have particular effects, and, you know, my teacher is so good at being able to take whatever energy comes to him and burn it up and turn it into what it is that he needs. You know, and so you say, well, can I take the effects of that, and can I burn it up? Do I have that power? Am I able to do that? Or is this really like slowing me down, or
right.
speeding me up, or right. not serving?
Yeah. Yeah. So if someone wanted to gain more familiarity with Ayurveda, they could take your workshop that's coming up.
They could take my workshop. They could take workshops.
And you've done series of workshops at Ishta, and I'm sure at other places, that are seasonal, or how do you usually organize those?
We've done some seasonal workshops because that is a great way for people. Because, so, you know, those Sundays, those junctions in the season, for most of us mere mortals, you know, some things will come up: seasonal allergies, knee pain, anxiety, like a summer cold, a winter cold, you know, whatever it is. And so those junctions are where we are most vulnerable. And so usually everybody's kind of feeling it, you know. I think the last class that I taught at Isha was like right in that, like, spring or winter kind of moving, the spring kind of moving it, like doing that back and forth thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went around the room and we asked everybody, what's going on for you? And it was really sweet, because everybody was just in this, because, you know, they'd been together for some time. And so everybody was able to just be very honest about where they were and what was happening for them. And the great thing to see is that it was different. So not everybody was experiencing seasonal allergies, because that's not everybody's thing.
Right.
But everybody was experiencing something.
Yeah.
And when the students were able to see what everybody was experiencing, it was the beauty of, oh, that's right, like, we're all going through this together, but we just have these slightly different iterations mm-hmm. of what affects us, of where our sensitivities lie,
yeah.
you know, and where your kavagunya, where your, you know, the chink in your chain, you know, kind of sticks from yeah. time to time. And by being able to see, like, oh, that person really gets really nervous, and oh, this person, you know, gets stomach pains, and this person gets, you know, so when they were able to share with everyone, there was this like huge amount of compassion that just yeah. kind of came in. And, yeah. and then, you know, and I, you know, we started talking about, okay, well, so there are specifics to some of those symptoms, but there also are some generalizations. And oftentimes if we start using first the principles of the generalizations of how to monitor doshas during those seasonal times, oftentimes we can pacify things. We mm-hmm. can slow things down mm-hmm. and get people to start to feel, oh, okay, like I'm not freaking out.
Right.
And then, you know, if it's more of a long-standing situation, then people will seek me out, and then they'll say, oh, okay, I need to tweak my diet a little bit more, or I need some hands-on work, or, you know, can we look, so, you know, sometimes we'll look at birth charts, and we'll look at some of the, like, more of the cosmological effects of what are going on, and just really kind of discuss goals, or discuss, you know, and the funny thing is all of the Ishta students, there's like this, it's, you know, which makes sense, you know, because people are drawn towards Al for a particular reason. And so there is this particular kind of literal map, like literal star map, that it's not in everybody, but it's in like 89% of the students that I've spent time with there. And I'm that's interesting. And it comes up.
Huh.
Yeah. And so it's like, now I'm not surprised by it. I was surprised at first.
Right.
And I was like, oh, interesting. I was like, look at that. I was like, last week I was with so-and-so and they had this. And then I was just like, oh, okay.
Right.
I was like, that's, you know, there's an energy that's being held here.
Yeah.
You know, and you are all reflecting that energy back and forth to one another.
Yeah. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's great. Mm. It's totally great.
Wow.
Yeah. And Al was, you know, so I spent time, I did Al's training, you know, and Al was great because Al, like, I can be like a discerning one. So I remember I went up to him in one of the lectures and I said, okay, and I want to talk to him about this or that or whatever. And then, you know, he was really great, at being, and just saying, you need to go and do something else. You need to go and seek out someone, you know, because I definitely was like, you're nice. And he was like, you're nice. But we both had like a level of satisfaction of like, yeah, it's okay. Like, and he kind of like gave me the blessings to like, be like, you know, go out, keep exploring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, I'm interested to hear how things progress with you and how you decide to keep exploring.
Yeah.
And you have a website?
I do. That's something that is my part of my personal struggle is going, oh, I'm like okay at business, but not great. So I've been working on redoing the website now for way longer than I should.
I think a lot of people have that issue going on.
Of course they do.
Especially because the internet itself is in constant flux. So what is a website? Like somebody just wrote me recently or someone just posted recently, I guess I'm supposed to keep updating my website, but mostly I'm on this and that.
Yes, you know? So, exactly. You know,
but what I was really wondering is how can people find out more about what you're up to?
Yes, so not to evade the question. So so I do post information there. I am taking a social media break right now, so I'm not posting on social media. So you can find me at www.somaray.com, and it will post classes and workshops and events that I'm either participating in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for coming out and having this delightful
chat. It was my pleasure.
Yeah. And I won't see you this summer, but I look forward to catching up in the fall.
I can't wait to hear about your travels.
Yes. Thank you.
And I look forward to catching up in the fall as well.
Awesome. Thanks. Namaste.
Thank you, Peter. Namaste to you as well.
That's today's episode of Peter's podcast, the time traveling episode. I hope you've enjoyed it. Greetings from Helsinki and looking forward to seeing you soon. We still have a space remaining in our retreat to France. So if you've got yourself over on the continent and you'd like to join us, check it out, peterfurco.com/France2018. I look forward to talking to you again soon. Namaste. Thank you.